Morning, everybody. Today's daf in Avodah Zarah, daf Yud Aleph. We're a little bit behind. We're in Yud Amud Beis, and we're towards the bottom. Mostly I got it today. A little bit of halacha coming in. Some interesting halachic topics today. Today we'll talk about Baal Tashchis, the prohibition of destruction. And we'll talk also about Tzar Baalei Chaim, some of the more ambiguous discussions in the Gemara, right? Isurim in the Torah that are not necessarily black and white in the Chumash, but we'll talk about that today. But mostly it's going to be a Gadita today. We continue from where we left off yesterday. We discussed yesterday mostly about the relationship between Rebbe and Antoninus. Rebbe and Antoninus had a very special relationship. The Gemara described it. We went through some of the more interesting and strange stories of the relationship that took place between the two. Antoninus was one of the Roman emperors, 2nd century. Rebbe, of course, is the last of the Tanaim. And the two of them experienced an unbelievably close relationship. They loved each other. In fact, I'm not using that terminology just for no reason. The Gemara later on will point out that they had a very, very strong love relationship between one another. They were very, very, very close. The last thing we left off with was a question that Antoninus had to Rebbe, and that is, am I going to get a chelek in olam haba? Am I going to go to the world to come? And Rebbe's answer very simply was, yes, you are. Right? Despite the fact that he's not Jewish, but that doesn't mean anything. Everyone goes to olam haba, Jews and non-Jews. I pointed out in Sanhedrin, in the 11th parak of Sanhedrin, it's very clear. The Mishnah tells us that Bilam does not get a portion of the world to come. It's just a simple deek in the Mishnah, which the Gemara makes over there, is that Bilam is not going to get a portion of the world to come, but all other righteous non-Jews are going to get a portion of the world to come. And that's what Rebbe told Antoninus, that he's going to get a portion of the world to come. Then they quoted the pasuk in Ovadia. As I mentioned yesterday, Ovadia is all about Edom, which is really means that Ovadia is all about the Roman Empire. So the pasuk in Ovadia seems to suggest otherwise. Let's pick it up from over here. We're in the Gemara inside. Two dots after the lines become wide. The Haksiv, the pasuk says, Lo yes, Srid Leves Esav. Right, there's not going to be any remnant of the house of Esav. And Rome is a byproduct, the descendant of Esav. And so consequently, what he's pointing out is that the Navi seems to indicate that because you're from Rome, because you're descendant of Esav, you're not going to get a portion of the world to come. And Rebbe's response was, Be'osem Masa Esav. Yeah, when you behave like Esav, then and only then do you lose your portion of the world to come. But Rebbe says, Tankininos, you do not behave like Esav, you're not gonna lose your portion of the world to come. Tanyanami Hachi. We have a brace that supports this as well. Lo yes, three leves Esav, Yachula Kol Tamalama Leves Esav. Base Be'osem Masa Esav. No, it's only base Esav. Meaning that you have to behave like Esav. The brace that supports this position that Rebbe takes. Am Levak Siv Shma Edom Achav V'chol Nesiyeha. So the rulers, the Malachim, are considered part of Edom. Amarle Machav Lo Kol Machav. No, not all the rulers. Some of the rulers. Kol Nesiyeha Lo Kol Sa. V'lo Kol Machav. Kol Nesiyeha V'lo Kol Sareha. Tanya Nami Hachi Machav Lo Kol Machav. Kol Nesiyeha V'lo Kol Sareha. Okay, so not everyone is necessarily included in this labeling of being a king of Edom and therefore not going to get a portion of the world to come. And the Gemara tells us who is to be excluded. Machav Lo Kol Machav Pral Antoninus Ben Asviras. So this excludes Antoninus Ben Asviras, who is not included in this blanket labeling. Therefore, he will, in fact, even though, despite the fact that he's a melech, he's a king of Rome, he's going to get a portion in the world to come. Yesterday, we talked about the appointment of his son. His son's name was Asvirus. Right now, currently, we're learning that his father's name was Asvirus. So he named his son after his father. Okay. Kol nisiyev alo kol sara prat l'ketia bar shalom. Not all of the princes of Rome, the Gemara tells us Ketia Bar Shalom is not included in the princes. Ketia Bar Shalom Mai. Okay, so this is the first time we're getting an introduction to a figure by the name of Ketia Bar Shalom. Who is that? Dahu Kesar Dahave Sanili who died. There was a Caesar who hated the Jews. Amalahu Lechshavid Machusa Mishalolo Nima Baraglo Yiktenu V'Yichya O Yinichenu V'Yitzayim. So he asked the dignitaries of his kingdom, right? Apparently the Senate. Okay, and he says to them, "Let me ask you a question. When you have Nima, now Nima in the Gemara usually translates as a hair. Here, that's not what it means. Nima is some sort of growth that's coming out. You want to call it a wart, that's fine. But mishalolonima biraglo, so you have a wart growing on your foot. So what do you do? Should you cut off the wart and live, or should you just simply allow it to grow and die? So amrulo, the answer is pretty obvious. So if you have such a wart, so you should cut it off and you should live. So the and obviously the conclusion therefore is that in his mind the analogy works that the Jews are the wart, and so therefore this Caesar is thinking, okay, so I'll just cut off all the Jews. So Amalu Ketia Bar Shalom. So Ketia Bar Shalom stands up and says, "I have two arguments in terms of why it is this is not a good idea. Chada. Number one, Delo Yechat Lahu. You won't be able to. Delo Yechat Lahu Lekulu. The problem is that obviously this is after the Chorban Bayit Sheni. This is sometime after the destruction of the Second Temple, and the Jews are all spread out. So you want to destroy the Jews, but you got to find them, and they're all over the place. They're all over the world. They're inhabited. They're inhabitants. They're guests of other nations. So you're not going to be able to get them all. The Chziv, Pasuk says, "Ki karba ruchos ha-shamayim peirasti eschem." I spread you out over the four, literally the four winds of the earth. My kamar, ilay medibit debidartahon bedal ruchos. The pshat in this pasuk in Zechariah is not that God promises, "I will spread you out." That's not the pshat. Ha'ika arba ruchos li arba ruchos mi baile. Because if that were the pshat, the pasuk would not say ki arba ruchos, it would say li arba ruchos. Right? And it doesn't say it. It says ki. The pasuk in Zechariah is making a parallel. So, ela kishem she'ief shel olam b'lo ruchos, kach ief shel olam b'lo Yisrael. Just like the four winds of the earth are part of the very fabric, the very nature of the world, so too, having Jews all over the place is part of the fabric, part of the nature of the world. Jews need to be in different places. Okay? Chabad took this Gemara very seriously. V'od karo lecha machusa ketia. And that was a compliment. So the... V'od karo lecha machusa ketia. And not only that, but also think of the PR. If you go ahead and you wipe out all the Jews, you're going to be called machusa ketia, and it's just a bad PR move. You don't want to be known as a nation that just simply kills another nation, right? You don't want to be a genocidal nation, right? History doesn't treat them well. Okay, so Amar Leh, so these are the two arguments of Ketiyah Bar Shalom to the Caesar, and obviously in doing so, even though Ketiyah Bar Shalom is not Jewish, that's in the context of the Gemara, that's clear, but the point the Gemara is making is that, you know, he is a defender of the Jews. Okay, so the Caesar looks at Ketiyah Bar Shalom and says, "Those are two excellent points." Okay, good. That's the good news. The bad news is, I got to kill you now. Okay? Miu called the Zachi Lamalka Shadule Le Kamunya Chalila. But you bested me in an argument, and I got to throw you into a Kamunya Chalila. Rashi Bayis Male Afar sounds like being buried alive. Okay, I'm not exactly sure. It doesn't sound good. Whatever it is, it doesn't sound good when I say in the Aramaic. And when I read Rashi, it sounds even worse. It's not good. So, Kadhava Nakhtin Leh, V'azlan, Amr Leh, Hahu Machanusa, Vaila Le Ilfa, the Azla B'lo Mechsa. So, a certain matron, right? And Rashi over here says she's Roman. Okay? A certain matron says to him, Ketiyah Bar Shalom, as he's being sent to his death, it's a shame you didn't pay your taxes. Now, she wasn't talking this world. She was obviously making some sort of reference. He understood what she was saying in the sense that what she was saying, Rashi, klamar oylecha hova aleim oso nerag shalom malsa et atzmecha. It's kind of a shame that you're being killed for not being Jewish, but defending the Jews, and you don't even have a milah, says Rashi, the tito chelik imahem, and therefore you're going to get a portion together with them. Now, obviously this Gemara is extraordinarily strange. Let's first finish the story in the Gemara, and maybe we'll make an attempt to understand it a little bit better. I'm not saying we will, but at least we'll make an attempt. The story finishes off, nafla al reshe da arlasei kata, so he gives himself a circumcision. As per the advice given to him by this Roman woman, he gives himself a circumcision. Amar Yavit Machsa Chalafis V'Ivris V'Ivris. I paid my taxes. I'm now going to go ahead. I'm going to pass over, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to hang out over there, and receive my portion in the world to come. Okay. The Gemara over here is, of course, extraordinarily strange. Again, let's just finish the Gemara first, and then I'll come back. Kikashadu le'amar. Now, as they're throwing him in to his death, into this open grave, the house filled with dirt, so he suddenly made the following statement. This was his sava. This was his wishes for what's going to happen with the state. Kol nichsar l'Rabbi Kiva v'chaverim. I'm going to give everything, all my state, to Rabbi Kiva and his chaverim. Okay, so we are not that far after the destruction of the Beit Sheni. If Rabbi Kiva's in play over here, so Rabbi Akiva, for 40 years of his life, last 40 years of his life, lived after the destruction of the temple. Okay, so we are still within the... we're still very very close after the destruction of the temple. Yatz Rabbi Kiva v'darash, and here Rabbi Kiva expounds v'haya la'aron levanov, right? That when they went to war, so part of the spoils were split between Aaron and his children. Mechzel Aaron and mechzel levanov. And how did they divide it? Half of it went to Aaron, and half of it went to his children. Yes, and therefore he concluded that of Ketiah's estate, which he gave to Rabbi Kiva, so half of it goes to Rabbi Kiva, and half of it goes to the students of Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Yatza Baskol v'amra, Ketiah b'shalom mezuman l'chayi olam haba. And out comes the Baskol, and the Baskol says that Ketiah b'shalom is going to get a portion in the world to come. Finishing up, Bacha Rebbe v'amar, Rebbe, upon recounting the story, telling over the story, this is his reaction, v'amar, yesh koneh olamo b'sha'achas, v'yesh koneh olamo b'kama shanim. This is not going to be the first time that we're going to see this comment of Rebbe here in Avodah Zarah. Stay tuned. A week from now, you're going to hear this again. Some people get a portion of the world to come just in one moment in time, just with one act and one deed. And some people, it takes a lifetime of work. And he cried over that, and that made him very sad. It is an extraordinarily strange story. Probably the strangest part, if I could say that, is the idea that without a bris milah, he's not going to get a portion of the world to come. That's very strange. There is no mitzvah upon a non-Jew to get a bris milah. And nowhere, when we learn Sanhedrin, nowhere did the Gemara over there make any kind of suggestion that, oh, the non-Jews are going to get a portion of the world to come, but only if they get a bris milah. We don't have that concept. So it's definitely very strange that for him, for Ketiah bar Shalom, upon the advice of this woman, this Roman woman, he says to himself, oh, I got to get a bris milah, because anyway, I'm dying for the Jews. Could be, again, now I'm just suggesting, it could be that everyone's going to get a portion of the world to come. The question only becomes how much chelek, how much portion of the world to come, right? And that's going to be, it's going to be reflective of what the person did over the course of his lifetime. And it could very well be that he felt that if he, and the Roman woman, perhaps this was part of her advice as well, is that if he converted, so... Right, I understand this is not a full conversion, but if he converted, he'll get even more portion of the world to come. And so maybe the idea that she was intimating to him was, look, I understand, as it is right now, you're going to die and you're going to get a portion of the world to come. You defended the Jews, but if you become Jewish, you get even more of a portion of the world to come. Maybe that's part of the dynamics that's going on over here, but again, I'm just suggesting, I'm not sure if that's the correct shot in the Gemara.
I thought it was the opposite. The point was that non-Jews think that Jews think Gemara's context both before and after.
Right.
We don't feel that. Non-Jews also get it.
Right. And maybe that's why Rashi makes it a point, because the Matronusa, you could have said she was Jewish. And Rashi goes out of his way to tell us, no, she's not Jewish. It could be that the Gemara is reflecting their thought process. Okay, could be. Second last line on the page. Antonina Shamshel Rebbe. So Antonina served Rebbe. We talked about this yesterday. Right? He attended Rebbe to the point where we saw yesterday in the Gemara, where when Rebbe wanted to go up to his bed, Antoninus would bend down. This is a Roman king. He would bend down and say to Rebbe, okay, you step on me in order to get up to your bed. Antonina served Rebbe. Adarkan, I don't know who he is. Rashi doesn't give us much information. He was a minister, a prince amongst the Ovid Kochavim Sham Shel Rav. So he served Rav. So the Gemara is stringing together two storylines where basically you had a relationship between a non-Jew and a Jew, and they had a very familiar relationship. Ki Shachiv Antoninus, when Antoninus died, Amar Rebbe Nisparda Chavila. Rebbe says the bundle's untied, like it's gone. And the way Rashi explains it at the top of the next Amud, Ahavtenu shenikshara nefesh benefesh. Right? Shout out to my good friend Josh Fass. The love that bound us, nefesh benefesh, one soul to another soul, in other words, nispar dechavila, it's now undone, right? We had such a unbelievably close relationship, and now he's dead, and obviously he was very sad. And kishachav adarkan, and when adarkan died, amar rav, nispar dechavila, same thing, nispar dechavila, it's no longer the package is unwrapped. The Gemara uses the exact same terminology of nispar dechavila, you know where else? By Elias. Right, the Gemara in Gittin. Gemara in Gittin talks about what if there's no coin, right? What do you do in a shul when there's no coin? So the term that this is the exact same terminology, and it's part of chavila, like the package is undone. Like at that point in time now, there's no longer any order. You can call up whoever you want for Rishon. Okay, Unklus bar kolonimus. Okay, this is a couple of Gemaras out there that discuss Unklus. We know where to targum. On Chumash. In fact, Targum Unklus. He is the author of the Targum. So Unklus bar kolonimus igayer. So he converts. Now, historically speaking, when did he live? So I don't know exactly, but in the context of the Gemara, once again, we're somewhere under Roman rule. And he apparently was a very important person amongst the members of Rome. Shadr Kesar Gunda de Romai Abasre. So Caesar sent a Gunda de Romai, some sort of commission, some band of Romans after him, Mashchinu Bikrai, Igayir. So what he did, he was the best Kiruv guy around. With no disrespect, of course, to you, Rabbi Brody, but he was the best Kiruv guy around. So they came to him, and all he did was cite some psukim. The Gemara doesn't tell us which psukim, I'm sure you would like to know. he cited some psukim and they converted the Romans who were sent on commission to get him back. So they sent a second commission. But their instructions were very clear. Don't talk to him, because you're going to talk to Unklus and he's going to cite some magical psukim and you guys are going to convert it, and just don't talk to him. So as they are taking him back, so Unklus says, "Look, I'm not gonna do the psukim stuff. Okay, we'll just have a nice conversation. It's just a simple conversation, right? Milsa ba'alma. I'll tell you some things. Okay, nifurya naka nura kame pipura. Now we're going to be talking about the level of hierarchy in the Roman government. Okay, I don't know who any of these people are. The only one I will recognize is the hegemona, because if you remember in Suvos, we talk about how the hegemon unfortunately had relations with the girl before the arusa, before she got to be with her husband. Okay, so the hegemon is the only one I recognize. After that, you know, your guess is better than mine. So nifura naka nura kame pipura. So the nifura, who is the low man on the totem pole in the governmental hierarchy of the Romans. So he holds a candle in front of the Pipura. Pipura le duchsa, duchsa le hegmona, hegmona le kuma. Kuma is number one. Kuma is the melech. Okay? I didn't know that, but right, kuma is the melech. So good. So in other words, everyone holds a fire in front of the one who is higher than him. Kuma minaka nura mikame. So mikame inish. Sorry. And kuma, the king, he's not going to hold the candle in front of anyone else. He's the king. Amri Leilo. He asked that to the commissioners as a question, and their answer, of course, is no. No, that's not how the king behaves. Amr Lahu, so now Unklus starts getting religious on them. Amr Lahu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Naka Nura Kame Yisrael. So he says to them, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our king, so he holds a fire in front of us. Right? That's what God does for us. Yechsiv Hashem Olech Lefneim Yomam. HaKadosh Baruch Hu walks in front of them. Right, be'amud anan, and then the pasuk goes on, uvalayla be'amud esh. Kadosh Baruch Hu at night lights the way up for us. That's what God does for us. God loves us, and this is what He does for us. And they were turned on, right? Igayir, kulhu, and they all converted. Hadashadagunda achrina basrei. Now we're up to the third commission now, who's tracking down Unklus and trying to get Unklus back. Now their instructions were, look, I get it, right? Whoever sent them, apparently Caesar sent them, but the Gemara doesn't say that. But look, I get it, right? Don't talk psukim, don't talk politics. Don't talk anything with him. Right? There's no subject matter that you're allowed to talk with him. Your instructions are, go, get Unklus, and bring him back over here. And pretty much that's it. And don't have any conversation with him. So, as they're taking him out, there's a mezuzah on the door of his house, and Osiv Yadei Alei puts his hand on the mezuzah. This is the only reference in all of Shas that talks about putting a hand on the mezuzah. This is the source. You'll see many people, as they go through the doorway, they put their hand on the mezuzah, and they kiss the mezuzah. The Gemara makes no mention of kissing the mezuzah, nor kissing her hand. But the idea, however, the Gemara is certainly very clear about, is to put your hand on the mezuzah, right, to remind yourself as you're walking out that the mezuzah is there. The Amar Lahu Mai Hai. But when he did that, it engendered curiosity, and they look at him and they said, what are you doing? Now, they made the cardinal error of talking, right? And they weren't supposed to talk, and that's what the instructions were. But, you know, Akar Mai Hai, what are you doing? I'm relay, Amalan At. So they say to him, explain it to us, look, I'll tell you how it normally works. The king's on the inside, and he's got servants and guards on the outside. The ilu HaKadosh Baruch Hu avadav mibifnim, v'hum mishamram mibachutz. And meanwhile, Hashem is outside protecting the servants who are inside. Shenema Hashem Yishmor Seischa V'Olecha Me'ata V'Ad Olam. Okay? And that's the mezuzah. The mezuzah is reflective of the fact that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a shomer. He's a guardian. Unlike your king sits on the inside and is protected by guards on the outside. E'gayer. And they converted. So we are now three commissions in. Every commission converted because of Unklus's explanation. By the way, right, I'm sure Rabbi Brody can explain this better than I can, but obviously his methodology of Kiruv is all based on Ahava. It's all based on love. Right? It's, you know, his arguments are HaKadosh Baruch Hu watches over us, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides light for us on the way. Right? It's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us. Right? That's what did it for them. That's what caused the Geirus. Sulo Shadda Basrei, and that's it. And the Gemara says, no other commission. They left Unklus alone from that point forward. We go back to Rebbe and Antoninus. The Pasuk says, regarding the twins that are going to be born to Rivka, right, don't read it as Goyim. Goyim means nations, which is also accurate. Pshuto Shel Mikra is that two nations will emerge, Yaakov and Esav, Jews and Romans. Right, that's a simple pshat over here. Don't read it going, but also read it as geyim, right? Because the ksiv is with a yud. So and geyim ki ga'o ga'a, right? People who are exalted. Zantinis v'Rebbe shlo paskam el shochanam lo chazeres v'lo kishos v'lo tznun v'lo biyamasachama v'lo biyamasak shamim. They had constant food all year round, and not food, not just any food, but good food, food that was helpful. The Amar Mart no mechatech ochel. Let's talk about first the radishes. Radishes help break down the food. Chazeres mahapech. Chazeres turns it over in the digestive tract. And I'm sorry, mahapech machal and kishus marchiv mayam. And the cucumbers, they expand the digestive tract. Okay, I'm not a GI guy. I don't have a biological explanation for all this. But the Gemara, which often gives medicinal advice, talks about how these particular foods were extraordinarily helpful for digestion. And these were by Rebbe and Antoninus all the time. They were the geyim. They were the exalted ones. The hatan debe Rebbe Shema, lamini krashma kishum, and meshakashma gufa shaladun kacharavos. The Gemara is bothered because of another statement by Rebbe Yishmael, in that cucumbers are like swords for the body. And the Gemara just described cucumbers as excellent for the body and excellent for the GI tract. Lokasha habiravve habesutra. The Gemara says big cucumbers versus small cucumbers. The big cucumbers are like swords for the body. The small cucumbers are good for the GI tract.
And that's only if you don't actually cut them off. Maybe try to eat a 12-inch cucumber whole is going to be injurious to the body.
Good. 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 Yom Haleidav Yom Hamisa. Okay. The day of the birth and the day of death. Right. If the Roman king dies, the birthday, the death day, they turn into pagan holidays. Okay, mechlad or meir sefer lo shnamisa, she ish basrefa lo shnamisa, she ain't basrefa, palchi balavar is kachav. Now from Rav Meir's standpoint, they burn the king, they don't burn the king. Now, we point this out back in the Mishnah. We don't mean burn the body of the king. Right? When the king died, the minhag was to take his possessions and burn the possessions. It's a way of showing honor and respect to the king. It's basically saying, right, you're so irreplaceable. Like, you know, even though he's going to be replaced, but in other words, no one's going to wear your clothing, and no one's going to be able to ride in your chariot, and they were yours, and right, it was a token sign of honor to the king.
His numbers being retired.
Right. It's a great mushel. We were up in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, and we went to Turner Field, and they have the numbers of all the, you know, the Braves great right in front of the field. We got a picture of ourselves in number 44. thank you. Thank you. Now the Gemara thinks in its Havaminam that the issue over here between Rav Meir and the Chachamim is an issue of, is this a paganistic act, the burning of the king, the burning of the possessions of the king, is this a pagan act? And the way the Gemara thinks right now is that this is the machlokus in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether burning the possessions of the king is a pagan act or not. And if Rav Meir says that it's not a chok, so then that means that according to the Chachamim, it would be a chok. But to set the machlokus up like that, says the Gemara, is not right. The Hatanya, because we know Brisa Storfen al Malachim lo Medarchei Amori. Brisa says it straight out that if we did it for our own kings, it's not a Darchei Amori. It is not considered a pagan act. The Torah says, "V'chukuseim lo seilechu." We're not allowed to follow the actions of the goyim. It doesn't mean, well, they eat, therefore we can't eat. Obviously, it means that if they do something which is exclusively a pagan act, we cannot copy, emulate that kind of activity. And so the Gemara is saying, oh, the machlokas over here in our Mishnah is all about, is burning the king's possessions pagan or not? But that's clearly not true. The Braisa says straight out, Sorfen amalachim v'lo medarchei amori. V'ichuke hi'anan hecha safin v'aksiv v'chukus em lo seleichu. And if it's a pagan act, we can't emulate it. So the Gemara concedes that that's not what's going on here in the Mishnah. There is no debate about whether or not burning the king's possessions is paganistic or not. It's not paganistic. But what it is, and the machlokas of our Mishnah, is that it's a siman, it's a sign. Meaning, when they have a king that dies, are they going to honor his death? Are they going to turn that day, his yurtzeit, lahavdil, are they going to turn that day into a pagan holiday? So we look to see, that's the machlokas in our Mishnah. According to the Chachamim, if they burn his possessions, that means they really liked him. Right? And that means they will turn that day into a pagan holiday. According to Rav Meir, either way, they burn, they don't burn, that yurtzeit is going to become a pagan holiday. According to Rav Meir, they're always going to turn the yurtzeit into a pagan holiday. And therefore, right, that would mean that, like our Mishnah says, that on that day you can't do business, and the 3 days before, and you can't do business with them. And Rabban Savrei, no, Misa Sheish Basrefa Chashiva Lohu Pachiba, Shein Basrefa Lohu Chashiva Lohu Pachiba. And according to the Chachamim, you have to look for Srefa. Srefa is not a paganistic ritual in of itself, but it's a simon. It tells us that if they burn the king's possession, that means they really liked him, and this yurtzeit will become a pagan holiday. Gufa. Sorfen al malachim eimo mishum darchei amori shenamar b'shalom tamos uvemistufos avasecha hamalachim. Right, pasuk in Yirmiyahu, this is Yirmiyahu talking to Tzidkiyahu HaMelech, last king before the destruction of the first temple. And he says to him, don't worry, they're going to burn your possessions. Right, which Yirmiyahu is saying this as words of consolation to Tzidkiyahu. Essentially, yeah, they're gonna burn your possessions, and he's saying to him as a good thing. Clearly, it's not chukas agoyim. Ukeshem shesorfen al malachim kach sorfen al hanesim, and we do the same thing for a nasi as well. After the Chorban Abayis, We still have Jewish leadership, but they're no longer called the king. They're called the Nasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, Rabbi Gamliel HaNasi. Right? They're called Nasiim. But it's the same basic position, but it's not a melech because there is no, you know, there's no Beis HaMikdash. Umayim, Sofan HaMalachim. And exactly what do they burn? As long as we're here, the Gemara is now going to discuss. Mitasan, Uklei Tashmishan. Here we have the death of Rabbi Gamliel. V'sarfal of Unklus Agir Shivim Manetsuri. All right. So now with this Gemara, we can align Unklus the convert together with Rabbi Gamliel. So again, we're soon after the Churban Bais. So and they burnt 70 Manetsuri. V'hamart Mayim Sarfan Alayim Mitasan Uklei Tashmishan. Now we don't burn money; we burn their possessions. Ema bishiv emanitzuri. So the Gemara is talking about that's how much its value is. His possessions were shiv emanitzuri. I don't know how much it is, but the point certainly is that was a lot. The Gemara points out other things we do upon the death of a king. Okrin es al hamalachim ve'ein bo mishum darchei amori. We take the horse that they rode on and we're ma'akir. We rip off the hoof of the horse. Okay, now here we are in the Gemara. A strange practice, certainly, but a lot of halachic discussion in terms of this, and of which the Gemara speaks of none of it. Okay, but let's take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos discusses some of the more basic issues over here. Okrin ala malachim. So the horse that was used by the king, so they would rip off the hoof of the horse. The Gemara is about to tell us that you can't make the animal a trefa. So in other words, you have to rip the leg off on a low point, not a high point. When we get to chulin, we'll talk about exactly where the demarcation is between when it's a trefa and when it's not a trefa. Okay, but it still sounds pretty sadistic. We rip off the hoof of the animal. Right. Okay. Cut the tendon. Okay. Whatever. It does seem cruel. Tosos points out over here. It's the second to last Tosos on the page. Okan al malachim. V'im tamar v'amalo parach v'ayiket tzar balechayim kida parach lekaman gabi nosim v'nosim v'shuk shalav v'lis kochavim. So Tosos is bothered. Where's tzar balechayim? Sounds extraordinarily painful. And how come there's no issue with tzar balechayim? And in fact, in just a short couple days from now, the Gemara will ask that question. Tzar balechayim. On another issue, which we're going to see in just a couple days from now. But how come the Gemara over here doesn't make any mention of Tzar Bali Chayim? You're not allowed to cause pain to animals. Now, as I pointed out in the beginning of today, I asked you, show me the place in Chumash where the Torah says you're not allowed to cause pain to animals. The Torah does not mention this Isser straight out. Now, I could point, and you could point, to a number of mitzvahs in the Torah that intimate to us that there's an idea of Tzar Bali Chayim. But as an independent Isser, it doesn't exist. Right? I could tell you...
Noah, he didn't get to the lion.
Yeah, but that's a medrash. You're right. No, you're right. But that's a medrash. I'm talking about a clinical, a legal Isser in the Torah, where the Torah says, do not cause pain to animal. Lo sachtom shor bedisho. That's a good one. Shiluch haken, maybe. That's psychological. Right, your animal has to rest. Very good. Osoves Beno. Okay, maybe that's another one. Good. Right? So, and we could deduce from all those mitzvahs that you're not allowed to cause pain to animals, but the Torah never says straight out you're not allowed to cause pain to animals. The Torah itself never uses this terminology, Tzar Bali Chaim. Tzar Bali Chaim, which everybody knows, right? It's a sensitivity. It's a fantastic sensitivity. But the Torah never uses that terminology. That's a Gemara terminology. But it's there, and Tosfos wonders, how come we're not talking about it over here when we're talking about ripping out the tendon of the horse just to show honor to the king?
Why didn't they ask a similar question about Baltashkes?
That's next part. Next. De Bishlama, let's go on in Tosfos. De Bishlama Mishum Baltashkes Leka De Kevin De Chvodo Shal Melchos In Kach Ein Kan Hashchasa. Right, Tosfos says this a number of times, that the idea of Baltashkes is that you're not allowed to destroy for no purpose. Purposeless destruction is what the Torah prohibits. But if there is a purpose, so then it's not a problem about Baltashkes. So over here, we're offering honor to the king, so about Tashkis is not an issue. Right. Look, people make expensive tachrichin. That's not our minog anymore. But people make expensive death shrouds. Bal tashchis. What do you have to make such expensive death shrouds for? Use simple ones. Okay, so obviously if there's a purpose, so then it's not bal tashchis. El tzar balechayim echutar. But Tosfos says, I don't understand what happened to tzar balechayim v'yeish lomar. And Tosfos makes the following suggestion. Deshani kvod hamelech shukavod l'chol Yisrael. When we're honoring the king, we're honoring the Jewish people. V'asi kavod rabim. So now along comes kavod rabim, honoring the community. V'dachit tzar balechayim, and pushes off tzar balechayim.
It's strange about that. It almost seems that he almost holds now that kavod hamelech isn't a mitzvah, only because if it just was a mitzvah, why can't he just say a doche eslota? So you almost like it's not a mitzvah, but it's a super kavod. So it's not just that an essay is
right.
Doche,
right,
it's like
Steve, it's a good point. A parallel to this of the Tosfos, to make this parallel, I'm drawing the parallel, but we do find a parallel to this when it came to the story of making a minyan. Right, the Gemara Brachos tells a story about Rabbi Gamliel. Right, was Rabbi Gamliel? I think so. Okay, whatever. One of the Tanaim wanted to make a minyan. They had nine, and they had one Eved. So they said, "Okay, fine, no problem at all. So we'll be Meshachar the Eved. We'll free the Eved, and then we'll make a minyan." Now, freeing an Eved is an Isser in the Torah. The Torah says that La'olam b'em tavodu. They have to work for you forever. So the Gemara over there says, yeah, but making a minyan is mitzvah derabim. That's the terminology of the Gemara. It's mitzvah derabim. It's a public mitzvah, and therefore it can supersede the prohibition of freeing your slave. So Tosfos is right. Tosfos is taking that idea and translating it over here. Honoring the king is really kavod hatzibur, and that's going to override the prohibition of tzar balechayim. Okay. I don't have any more to. I don't know. Right. Obviously, more research needs to go into this position of Tosfos. The Gemara has a machlokus elsewhere, whether it's an Issa D'Oraisa or an Issa D'Rabban. Right. As I pointed out, you're not going to find it explicitly mentioned in the Torah. Okay. Amar Rav Papa Susharachav Alava Behema Tahara. Let me go back a little bit. The Hatanya Okanam Malachim Vehema Mishim Darchei Mar. You can rip out the tendons of the leg of an animal over the death of a king, and that's not a paganistic ritual. Amar Rav Papa Susharachav Alav Uvehema Susharachav Alav. Rav Papa says specifically the horse that he rode on, right? Uvehema Torah Lo VeHatanya Ika Sheish Batreifa Asur VeShem Batreifa Mutter. We learned in a brisa that if it's Ika Sheish Batreifa, if it's the type of a ripping of tendon that's going to render the animal a treifa, so then that would be forbidden. Shame about treifa mutter. And if it's not going to make the animal treifa, so that would be fine. Ve'ezu ikar shame about treifa. And the Gemara just gives us a demarcation point. Ha'menashe parasasa minar kuva ulemata. The animal has a joint, a knee, basically. And if you go minar kuva ulemata, that is not considered a treifa. So when we're talking about lemata, below, we are going, I'm going to say this right, distal from the body, correct? Away from the body. So Tirgama Rav Papa, be'egla hamoshkin be'karon. Fine. So when we talk about a horse, we're talking about the horse that he rode on. When we're talking about other animals, we're talking about other animals in the context of his possession. Meaning that if he goes on a wagon, the wagon's being drawn by the calf. So you're right. He didn't ride on the calf, but the calf is considered part of his possessions because it drew the wagon. Okay, good. All right.
What's the source of this prohibition? You can't use the kosher animals.
Right. So that's the last Tosfos on the previous page. Last Tosfos on the previous page. Rashi says, right. Tosfos quotes also legrom treifus lebehema torah biyadayim. Right. Rashi just simply says it. And that's where Tosfos interjects. Fatema the chikachim heim, she also ligrom lahem treifus. Well, like what is that? Right. So Rashi has trouble understanding Rashi. And Tosfos goes on, but okay, right, a good point. Okay, back to the Gemara now on Yud Aleph Amud Beis. We're towards the top of the page. Two dots. Ibayilahu hechi ketani yomta glachas vehanachas blurioso doma yomta glachas zikano vehavars blurioso. They had a certain hairstyle back then. It was a pagan hairstyle But basically, they shaved off their head and they left off like a, like almost like a ponytail, if you will. They braided it, and that was a certain hairstyle, pagan hairstyle. It's called bloris. And in Avodah Zarah, we're going to see a lot of this discussion about this particular hairstyle.
Is that like the Chinese?
I guess, yeah, so, something like that. So the Gemara wants to know now, when the Mishnah talks about the bloris, are we talking about the removal or the leaving of the bloris? And Tashma did Tanya Tarvayu. The Gemara says we have two braces. Yom Tiglach is a kind of a hanachas blor yourself. Yom Tiglach is a kind of a havar's blor yourself. Two braces reflecting two different views in terms of what is the pagan act, leaving it or cutting it off. And the Gemara clearly is, Gemara leaves us off over here. This is the end of that. Amar Rav Yehuda Shmuel. There's one other holiday that's not discussed in our Mishnah. Later on we'll talk about why it's not discussed in the Mishnah, but there's another Roman pagan holiday that's not discussed in the Mishnah, and I guess we'll call this the Halley's Comet holiday. Once every 70 years, they did this holiday. Now, this is going to sound like a very strange holiday. It is a very strange holiday. The Gemara does not give it a name. Okay, but so here's how the holiday is celebrated. You take a person who is full person, right, and you put him on top of a lame person, and you ride him umalbishin also big day adam rishon, and the person on the top is wearing big day adam rishon. Rashi right away realizes that this is all symbolic, right? This parade. Of the guy who is healthy riding on top of the guy who is lame. And Rashi writes, right, Adam Shalem Keneged Esav. The person on top represents Esav. Adam Chiger Keneged Yaakov. Solea al Yerecho Klamer Adain Esav Sholeit al Yaakov. And this holiday is basically Romans are still on top. Right? That's what this holiday celebrates once every 70 years. And it's just a sick part of the holiday. They would put the person who was riding on top, who represented Esav, so he would wear a mask which was actually the scalp of Rabbi Yishmael. Right, remind each other that Rabbi Yishmael, right, our Sarah Ruge Machus, there were 10 martyrs, and Rabbi Yishmael suffered a terrible death in which the princess asked if he could be kept alive because he was so beautiful looking. So the Caesar said no, but I'll save you his head. And so and the head was converted into a mask. The Rashi writes over here. It's just a scary Rashi. Rashi says Rashi karkif lo shel Rabbi Shmuel kohen gadol me'arugei malchus hayom mitoch yafya nechnas b'leiv bas kesar v'hivshit or panav v'chanta b'afar simon. So they somehow cured it. They somehow preserved it. Shetei mekuyemes v'lo yishtene v'adayin munach b'ginzei romi. Now, I think what Rashi's saying, you know, agree or disagree, that Rashi's giving, you know, Adayin meaning nowadays. It's still in Ginzei Romi. I'm not sure if that's what Rashi's saying, but it could be. Anyway, back to the Gemara.
It would mean it's in the Vatican.
Right, right. That's what Rashi would be alluding to.
Rome was alluded by the Vatican
right.
In like 400
AD. Right.
So
I don't know.
In Washington, D.C.
Right. Vitalo Lobitsavare, a mitkal. Resh Zuze. He would wear some sort of jewel that was weighing 200 zuz around his neck. And they would cover the streets with some sort of onyx, another type of stone. And here's how what they would announce during this parade. Sach Kire Plaster. Sach Kire Plaster, Rashi explains. Cheshbon Akeitzim Kize, the person who talked about the end of the exile, he's a liar. And Rashi assigns this to Yaakov. Yaakov, right, who forecasted the Geula, the future Geula. Achud de Marana Zaifana, the brother of our master, meaning the brother of Esav, this is a direct reference to Yaakov. He is a forger, right? In other words, he went in front of Yitzchak claiming that he was the older and he wasn't. Dechame chame udelo chame lo chame. Whoever sees this today sees it, and whoever doesn't see this today, chances are you're not going to see this. This happens once every 70 years. So really, if you see it, good, and if not, you're probably not going to see this. Maya hanila rama bramuusa ula zaifana bizaifanuse. What good is it for the tricker in his trickery and for the forger in his forgery? Meaning Yaakov clearly didn't win. And then, umisaimimba, however, almost like crossing themselves right away, they would end off with the following. Vaila din kad yakum din. Woe to the day of judgment. Almost like forecasting, like this isn't going to last. Meaning, right now, here's the story, but this isn't going to last. Amar Ravash, before I go on to the Gemara, I think, and again, this is just a suggestion on my part, they celebrate this once every 70 years. Why? Why every 70 years? So I'm going to suggest to you that because 70 for them was like the time of Gullus, the time of exile. You remember the first exile they went into. So Daniel said this and Yirmiyahu said this. You're only going to be exiled for 70 years. After 70 years, you're going to be redeemed. You'll remember the Gemara Megillah tells us that Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, Achashverosh, everyone was looking at the number 70. Like, how do you calculate the number 70? And every one of them was looking towards 70, and each one of them thought, oh good, now the 70 years went by, and they weren't redeemed, and good. And they were all so happy, and they all made a party. And perhaps, over here, that's also the significance of the number 70 over here, because, you know, every 70 years that went by, oh, Jews weren't redeemed, and somehow 70 for them becomes like the magical number of redemption. Okay, possibly. Okay, there's a little bit more to go, but we'll stop over here. We'll pick it up tomorrow. A couple more pagan holidays to discuss, and then we're going to move on to the new Mishnah. Rabbi Chanani, Melech HaShem, Mazakosh, Baruch Hu, Zakhi, Sol. Fiyach HaChir, Ben Torah, Mitzvah, Shanem, Manech, HaFetz, HaMatzikoh, Yagdil, Torah, V'yadim.